Welcome to the Foreign Interference in Our Elections, What We Really Learned from Mueller's Report conference call. My name is John and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you do have a question, press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. And now I'll turn the call over to Adam Ambrogi.
Thank you all for joining today's call. My name is Adam Ambrogi, and I'm the Elections Director at Democracy Fund, a foundation based in Washington, D.C. The Mueller report is clear. Russia and their agents and allies gained access to voter data and targeted every level of our campaign and elections, severely compromising the integrity of our political processes and election systems. According to the FBI, Russia remains intent on disrupting and influencing future U.S. elections. Election security is clearly now a national security issue. The actions uncovered by the Mueller report may further erode confidence in our election systems and undermine the spirit of our democracy that is meant to elevate the voices of the American public. With the 2020 presidential election ahead of us, Democracy Fund is committed to continuing the work we do to safeguard elections in the United States and work to promote meaningful trust in the election system, including our continued support of organizations like the Campaign Legal Center. With their substantive, legal, and policy knowledge and expertise on staff related to law, they are one, if not the most knowledgeable, nonprofits and advocates on these challenges in the United States. Campaign Legal Center staff have worked on the Hill, Federal Election Commission, presidential campaigns, the private sector, and many other regulatory bodies. Those experiences allow them to take a comprehensive approach to solving the most complex campaign finance issues. During today's call, CLC experts will identify and offer analysis on what we have learned from the Mueller report as it pertains to campaign finance violations or other bad acts. The bottom line is that we must accept the sophisticated level of interference by Russia and potentially other governments and work together on solutions to address these issues moving forward. Our collective goal is to protect and strengthen our democracy against outside actors in any future elections. After we hear from all of today's speakers, we will open the conversation up for Q&A from the audience. At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Trevor Potter. Trevor is the founder and the president of the Campaign Legal Center. Potter is a former Republican chairman of the Federal Election Commission and was general counsel to John McCain's 2000 and 2008 presidential campaigns. To many, he is perhaps best known for his recurring appearances on the Colbert Report as the lawyer for Stephen Colbert's super PAC during the 2012 election. The American Bar Association Journal has described Potter as, quote, hands down one of the top lawyers in the country on the delicate intersection of law, politics, and money. Potter has recently appeared on CBS's 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper, on CBS's morning news show Face the Nation, on NBC's Nightly News, and in the films Dark Money and The King. His writing has been featured in publications such as Washington Post and The Hill. Trevor, over to you.
Thank you, Adam, very much. It's good to be with everyone today. First, let me say how grateful I am to you and the Democracy Fund for your attention to this important issue. To begin, I think it's worth putting the Mueller report in the context of a long history of concern in this country about foreign interference. While the founders could not foresee the digital age, they certainly knew that foreign powers would have an interest in undermining our democracy, that they might attempt to frustrate our election process or influence the results in ways that would benefit their own interests and not ours. In the Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton warned explicitly about, quote, the deadly adversaries of Republican government and their, quote, desire in foreign powers to gain an improper ascendant in our councils. When they were drafting the Constitution, the founders took steps to guard against such ascendant by including guardrails, like the requirement that the president be a natural-born citizen rather than an imported aristocrat, and the emoluments clause, which prohibits federal officials from taking any emolument. anything of gift or service from foreign governments. Over the course of our history, there were periods of renewed concern about foreign influence. The French Revolutionary Government's actions in the 1790s in this country, the German Imperial Government's actions in World War I, and then the secret Nazi money funding propaganda attempting to sway American foreign policy and American voters in the 1930s. The Nazi activities led directly to Congress passing the Foreign Agents Registration Act at that time. More recently, in the 1990s, there was concern about potential Chinese influence via illegal foreign contributions. Now, in 2019, the Mueller report has presented us with an unequivocal conclusion. It says, quote, "The Russian government interfered in the 2016 presidential election in sweeping and systemic fashion." Close quote. The documented Russian actions fall under two main headings. First, hacking attacks on parties, candidates, and our election administration systems. And second, communications with the American public through paid advertising or fake accounts designed either to promote a candidate or to create public unrest. As the Mueller report writes, it was, quote, "a social media campaign designed to provoke and amplify political discord in the United States." The issue today, therefore, is how to protect the foundations of our democracy going forward from Russia or any other country or actor which seeks to create chaos in our elections or influence their outcome. What Mueller laid out in extensive detail is that 2016 exposed a host of vulnerabilities, from the digital disclosure gap in our campaign finance laws and regulations to gaps in enforcement of existing law. The sorry fact is that neither Congress nor the Federal Election Commission has taken any actions following the 2016 election to provide for disclosure of such foreign activities in U.S. elections. The good news is that there are solutions, and some could still be implemented in time for the 2020 election. The fundamental problem we face is our vulnerability to dark money groups whose secret funding provides a clear path for foreign dollars in our elections. But action on the Bipartisan Honest Ads Act in Congress would be a significant start, as would be new FEC regulations. Today, CLC is also releasing an issue brief, what Special Counsel Mueller's report tells us about campaign finance law and foreign interference. This brief is available on CLC's website and will be emailed to everyone listening to this call, along with a recording of today's call, after we are finished. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Trevor. Please remember that we will take questions after we hear from all of today's speakers. Now I would like to welcome Aaron Klopak to discuss foreign interference in digital advertising. After spending nearly a decade working on a wide range of campaign finance issues in the FEC's Office of General Counsel, Aaron joined Campaign Legal Center in August 2018. At CLC, her areas of focus include appellate and district court litigation and its federal reform and state and local reform programs. Aaron?
Thank you, Adam. So I'm going to talk about the findings in this special counsel's report, how they shine a light on an important loophole in our nation's campaign finance laws. And I think it would help by giving a little background on our existing rules for political ads. So our laws governing political advertising, both at the federal level and in many states, were written decades ago when TV was the dominant medium for political ads and digital advertising was hardly even a thing. These laws required advertisers that pay for television and radio ads that mention federal candidates and are broadcast shortly before an election to publicly disclose information about who they are and how much the ads cost. Existing laws also require those ads to include information in the ad itself about who sponsored the ad. These rules serve a fundamental public interest. Informing the public about who is spending money on election-related ads allows citizens to assess the electoral messages that they're bombarded with, to consider the messenger along with the message, and to make informed choices at the ballot box. But in the years since our current disclosure laws were written, political advertising has increasingly migrated to the internet. Most recently, in the 2018 midterms, $1.8 billion was spent on digital political ads, marking a 2,400% increase over the spending in the 2014 midterms. And yet, online ads remain largely exempt from our campaign finance disclosure laws. This means that if the exact same video ad is posted on TV and a social media webpage, the TV version could be subject to reporting and disclaimer requirements, while the online version is exempt from those same requirements. Special Counsel Mueller's report describes in detail how Russia exploited the digital disclosure loophole in carrying out its sweeping social media campaign to influence the 2016 presidential election. The report goes into extensive detail about Russia's stealthy social media campaign, which was designed, as Trevor mentioned, to provoke and amplify political and social discord in the United States. To highlight just a few of the special counsel's findings, the report describes internal documents from the Russian-financed Internet Research Agency that explicitly reference the goal of influencing the 2016 United States presidential election. Russian operatives reached millions of Americans through social media accounts that were designed to appear like personal accounts of United States persons, as well as large social media groups and pages that falsely claimed affiliation with United States political and grassroots organizations, some of which mimicked real U.S. organizations such as the Tennessee Republican Party. To maximize the scope of Russia's election influence, Russian operatives purchased Facebook ads promoting their social media groups on news feeds of American audience members. According to the special counsel's report, they spent about $100,000 to purchase over 3,500 ads, many of which explicitly supported or opposed a presidential candidate. The report cites the example of an ad that pictured Hillary Clinton and read, "If one day God lets this liar enter the White House as president, that day would be a real national tragedy." This activity clearly violated the federal ban on foreign nationals spending money on American elections. But because the law did not require any disclosure of who was behind the ads, it was easy for Russian operatives to carry out their election interference campaign without detection. And it's important to note that Russians were not the only one taking advantage of the digital disclosure loophole in our campaign finance laws. Recently published reports by CLC have revealed efforts by national super PACs to influence 2018 congressional races in a variety of states through digital ads that concealed who was actually financing those ads. For example, Majority Forward, a dark money group affiliated with the Democratic Super PAC, reported spending around $46 million in express candidate advocacy during the 2018 elections. But CLC dug into archives created by ProPublica and Facebook and identified even more spending on digital ads targeted at voters in states with competitive Senate races that was never disclosed. The group took advantage of the same digital disclosure gaps that Russian operatives exploited to avoid disclosing its spending on these digital ads to the FEC. Voters targeted by these ads, which stated that only that they were paid for by, quote, the tax scam, were given no indication that, in fact, a major Democratic dark money group was funding them. These examples highlight the digital disclosure gap in our campaign finance laws, which leaves Americans in the dark about both foreign and domestic spending to influence our elections. Now, as Trevor mentioned, federal responses to address this secret spending have stalled both in Congress and at the FEC, although I understand that just this morning, Senator Klobuchar issued a press release announcing that, along with Senators Graham and Warner, the bipartisan Honest Ads Act would be reintroduced. So that's encouraging, and we hope that they go on and pass that bill. The Honest Ads Act is also incorporated in H.R. 1, the sweeping democracy reform package that the House passed earlier this year. So perhaps there is still some hope for progress at the federal level. But in the meantime, the states are not standing by waiting for the federal government to step up and act. In fact, a number of states have passed their own laws reflecting some different approaches to addressing the digital disclosure gap. Now, the simplest approach is just to update existing disclosure laws and clarify that they extend and apply to digital ads. States like Vermont, Washington State, and Wyoming have taken this approach and amended their existing campaign finance laws or their pre-existing campaign finance laws to extend reporting and disclaimer requirements to ads distributed online. But other states have taken a more comprehensive approach and passed reforms that account for the unique challenges presented by advertising on digital platforms. Those challenges include the fact that online platforms allow advertisers to target their ads to specific audiences while allowing ads to remain unseen by the rest of the public. This ad targeting can make it easier for foreign actors and other groups that want to conceal their efforts to influence voters to get away with hiding their identity, because law enforcement officials and others who might look into the ads may never even be aware that the ads exist. The leading approach to address this problem is the creation of public repositories or archives of digital ads that ensure ads targeted to a limited audience are preserved and reviewable by law enforcement, watchdogs, and the public at large. Maryland, California, and New York have each passed laws that require digital political ad archives while taking different approaches regarding the details of those archives. In addition to states, to the state laws, large social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter have taken some voluntary steps to archive certain political ads disseminated by their platform. Although we're happy to see those efforts, because the platforms are free to cancel their archives whenever they wish, their voluntary efforts are not subject to enforcement. We believe legislative action requiring ad archives is the best approach. So, just to wrap it up, there are a few important takeaways here. I think the Mueller report exposed serious vulnerabilities in our campaign finance disclosure laws, but these are problems with solutions. As I've described, states are already taking action to close the digital disclosure gap. Congress can pass the Bipartisan Honest Ads Act, and the FEC could finally act on its longstanding rulemaking and clarify that existing disclosure rules do apply online. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Erin. As Trevor mentioned earlier, the issue brief, what Special Counsel Mueller's report tells us about campaign finance law and foreign interference, is available on the CLC website and will be emailed to you along with a recording of the call tomorrow. Now I would like to introduce Brendan Fisher, Director of Federal Reform for CLC. Brendan directs their work before federal regulatory agencies, such as the Federal Election Commission, to ensure vigorous and fair enforcement of campaign finance and ethics laws, and to hold candidates and political committees accountable for violating those laws. Brendan?
Okay, thank you, Adam. So I'm going to talk about civil enforcement of campaign finance laws' ban on foreign meddling. As the Mueller report acknowledged, establishing that a campaign finance violation is criminal can be a challenge, but that's where civil enforcement by the Federal Election Commission, or FEC, comes in. So given the high bar for criminal prosecutions, the FEC has an incredibly important role to play in guarding our elections from foreign interference, but it is not clear that they are up to the task. So to illustrate this point, let's talk about Donald Trump Jr. So as has been well documented, in June 2016, Don Jr. received a message from an associate offering, quote, official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary, offered as, quote, part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Don Jr. replied, I love it, and arranged a meeting with a person he was told was a Russian government attorney. Special Counsel Mueller analyzed whether Don Jr.'s conduct violated the law and largely concluded that it did. Don Jr.'s conduct implicated one of the central legal protections against foreign influence in elections, the ban on campaign contributions by foreign nationals. This ban not only prohibits foreign nationals from spending to influence U.S. elections, but also prohibits anyone else from soliciting that spending. The special counsel cited FEC regulations and guidance to conclude that the offered opposition research was a thing of value subject to the foreign national contribution ban. And he concluded that Don Jr. solicited this thing of value by responding favorably to the Russian offer and setting up a meeting to receive it. So in short, the special counsel concluded that Don Jr. violated the ban on soliciting a contribution from a foreign national. But Don Jr. was not criminally charged. And this is mainly because Mueller believed he couldn't establish that the president's son acted willfully, that he knew that he was violating the law. And the special counsel also cited challenges in proving the value of the promise documents, proving that the promise documents exceeded the threshold for a criminal prosecution. But that's where the FEC comes in. The FEC will not face the same challenges in pursuing civil penalties. For a criminal campaign finance violation, prosecutors must show that it was committed willfully, but there is no willful requirement for civil enforcement by the FEC. And the FEC need not establish the precise value of the solicited contribution to pursue civil penalties, just that the solicitation was for a thing of value. So for the FEC to proceed, it need only find reason to believe that Don Jr. solicited a contribution from a person he knew was a foreign national. And that evidence is very clearly laid out in Mueller's report, and the law is on the FEC's side. So on the one hand, we can say that Don Jr. is not in the clear just yet. But on the other, and I think more importantly, given the high bar for criminal prosecutions, the FEC's civil enforcement role is essential to protect our elections against foreign meddling. FEC enforcement helps address and deter reckless campaign finance violations that may not meet the standard for criminal enforcement. And the FEC can also help clarify potential gray areas in the law. And I think that's particularly important here. So even though the special counsel concluded that opposition research is subject to the foreign national ban, Mueller's decision not to criminally prosecute Don Jr. has been interpreted as suggesting ambiguity. One of President Trump's lawyers has even declared that, quote, there's nothing wrong with a campaign accepting opposition research from a hostile foreign power. So it falls on the FEC to send a clear signal that soliciting or accepting opposition research from a foreign government is unlawful. And the stakes are pretty high. If opposition research were not subject to the foreign national ban, then a foreign intelligence service could target every potential U.S. candidate, dig up incriminating details, and provide favored candidates dirt on their opponent. So it is pretty important, I think, that the FEC send a clear signal here. Campaign Legal Center has filed a complaint together with Common Cause and Democracy 21 asking the FEC to pursue civil penalties against Don Jr. And while that complaint is still pending, it's important to note that those matters involving foreign nationals that the FEC has resolved suggest that the agency is failing to adequately address foreign meddling in U.S. elections. So earlier this year, in response to a Campaign Legal Center complaint, the FEC levied $940,000 in fines after a Chinese-owned corporation illegally gave $1.3 million to Right to Rise, which is a super PAC that supported Jeb Bush in the 2016 election. Viewed in isolation, these fines were significant. They were the third largest in FEC history. But the super PAC's penalty for soliciting and accepting an illegal $1.3 million foreign contribution was a $390,000 fine. The super PAC was allowed to keep the remaining $910,000 in illegal foreign money that it had received. So this Right to Rise matter may have helped clarify the application of the foreign national contribution ban to foreign-owned corporations. But the FEC's failure to assess meaningful fines suggests that the agency is not adequately taking its deterrence responsibilities seriously. And in fact, in this particular case, the FEC only opened an investigation because the foreign corporation's president admitted to violating the law in an interview with The Intercept. It is exceedingly rare that the FEC will be presented with this kind of evidence. So if political operatives can be fairly certain that the FEC will not enforce the law at all, and in those rare cases where they do, they will impose meager fines, then many will choose to push the legal envelope. So I say all this to underscore the importance of the FEC's role in protecting our elections from foreign interference. The FEC is a six-member commission split evenly along party lines, and it requires four votes to open an investigation. And over the past decade in particular, the agency has been routinely deadlocking, and at the moment, the FEC is down to just four commissioners. So it must act unanimously to open an investigation. And as I mentioned, in those rare instances where it does enforce the law, the punishment is hardly proportional to the violation. So as a good point of comparison in the wake of the Mueller report, let's look at the Foreign Agents Registration Act, or FARA. FARA, like some of our campaign finance laws, had for decades been rarely enforced and as a result often ignored. Yet in the wake of the Mueller investigation, the Justice Department is stepping up enforcement of FARA and finally staffing the FARA office. So they are signaling that foreign lobbyists can no longer ignore the law. And as a result, there has been an upswing in FARA registration. So increased enforcement results in increased compliance. And I think if the FEC were to similarly signal that it takes the foreign national contribution ban seriously, we should expect to see increased compliance. But as it stands, the FEC's record of not enforcing the law sends a signal that wealthy special interests, both foreign and domestic, can push the legal envelope and get away with it. So what can be done? Certainly the FEC needs to take its role seriously, and we urge the commissioners to understand and prioritize the enforcement of the ban on foreign nationals meddling in U.S. elections. But there's also a role for Congress here. Congress should exercise its oversight responsibilities and demand that the FEC fulfill its duty to protect U.S. elections from foreign interference. Congress can refuse to confirm commissioners who are not committed to the mission of the agency. The six-member FEC is down to four commissioners, all of whom are serving on expired terms, so this opportunity could come sooner rather than later. And Congress should also consider legislation that would overhaul the agency and break deadlocks, like the bipartisan Restoring Integrity to America's Elections Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Brendan. As a reminder, you can access CLC's brief today at campaignlegal.org. It will also be emailed to you. To kick off our Q&A section, John will now provide you with instructions on how to ask questions of our speakers.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. Once again, if you do have a question, press star then one on your touch-tone phone.
Thank you, John. So, thanks. I'll kick off the first question here to give people time to formulate their own thoughts. So for Trevor, for Brendan, for Aaron, we've talked about two key matters that need addressing in the wake of the Mueller report, the digital disclosure gap and FEC reform. I also think that in the Mueller report, there were a lot of facts and circumstances that many of us thought should violate the law, criminal or civil, but that didn't seem to be the result. What do you take of that, and what other reforms should we be demanding in order to prevent foreign meddling in U.S. domestic elections?
Thank you, Adam. This is Trevor Potter. I'll start, and then we'll go from there. I think you're right. As you hear Aaron's description of what's in the report, what strikes me is that the detail of the actual Russian intervention is pretty overwhelming. I don't mean by that the proof of it, but just the amount of it. The fact that we have documents showing that the Russians set out to disrupt this country, to diminish our democracy, to take specific actions to influence voters, and that they did so, that I think there's one number in the report that says over 100 million Americans actually saw some of their misinformation, and it became part of the way the election was factored. Well, all of that is actually pretty shocking. And it, when you hear the description of the meeting at Trump Tower, at least my initial reaction is to say, surely this can't be legal. I think what's gotten lost in the discussion about, what is collusion, what is conspiracy, what is a criminal violation of law here, is that there clearly was foreign intervention in our election, and the special counsel, having detailed that at great length, said that as a matter of current law, it does not meet the very high standard to bring a criminal charge. As Brendan noted, that doesn't mean it's necessarily legal. There could be civil actions taken by the FEC, but it does mean that we have, I think, an appropriately high standard for prosecutions, and the law needs to be clear. And one of the things the special counsel said is there was enough murkiness in what the people on the campaign knew, in what constituted valuing information received from a foreign power, that they were not confident, which is the standard they have, that they could prove to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that these individuals knew they were breaking the law when they engaged in this activity. So you hear all that and you say, that doesn't mean that this didn't occur. It doesn't mean that these people weren't trying to do something we all believe is wrong and that the law says is wrong. It's a different legal question, again, appropriate for a prosecutor, of whether you can prove this to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. And that means what we need to do in some of these areas is clarify the law to make it clear that receiving information you know to be from a foreign power, a foreign agent, someone who is not, in fact, part of the U.S. political system, is itself a flat violation. Whether it's the FEC or Congress specifying that receiving such information is a violation regardless of how the financial cost of that is established. The special counsel says he thinks that it's pretty clear that it would be worth more than the federal minimum for such a violation of $25,000, but he also appears unsure whether he could prove that to a jury. I think we all would look at it and say, you know, the problem here is the foreign interference, not the question of whether the value was $25,000 or $25 million. In some ways, to quote a famous ad, the value is priceless because of the nature of the information. So I do think, Adam, that taking a look at both the laws and the regs to clarify the areas where the special counsel has indicated he thought that they were not clear enough would be really helpful, because I think there is a national consensus that the sort of activity described in the report is not acceptable and should not occur in any future election.
Just to piggyback on that, and briefly, it's sort of related to one of the examples Brendan mentioned with the Right to Rise PAC and the fine that it ended up paying. I think one area where we could clarify or sharpen our rules is in defining what constitutes a foreign national. And right now, foreign companies with domestic subsidiaries can effectively participate in elections. There are rules about foreign nationals not participating in the decision making, but as Brendan mentioned, it's rare that you have an example of someone actually admitting that they did that in violation of the law. And after Citizens United, now that corporations can spend unlimited amounts on elections, it's much easier for foreign nationals to sort of subtly participate in the actions of through foreign corporations in election activities. So clarifying the definition to extend to domestic corporations and LLCs and partnerships that are foreign controlled or foreign owned would be another area where we could improve the law.
And I think just to reiterate a point that Trevor alluded to in his opening remarks, and that even Attorney General Barr acknowledged when he appeared before Congress last week, is that dark money can hide foreign money. The lack of disclosure in our campaign finance system presents a national security threat. Dark money nonprofits have reported over $1 billion, with a B, in political spending to the FEC, but because their donors are not reported, we can't know how much of that money came from foreign sources. We know that the NRA's nonprofit arm, for example, spent over $33 million on the 2016 elections, And there are some reports that prosecutors are investigating whether any of those funds came from Russia. We also don't know the extent to which foreign actors have used shell corporations like LLCs as pass-throughs to make anonymous contributions to other dark money groups or to super PACs. There is some evidence that foreign nationals funded Trump's inaugural committee through pop-up LLCs. So enacting legislation like the Disclose Act, some provisions of which were incorporated into H.R. 1, would go a long way towards guarding U.S. elections from foreign interference.
Thank you all for that. At this point in time, I think we'd like to open up the phones and lines for questions.
Thank you. And our first question is from Eliza Newland from American Prospect.
Hi, thank you. This is Eliza Newland Carney. Thanks for having the call. Another thing that the Mueller report indicated is that the Russians hacked accounts of election administrators in at least one Florida county. And I wanted to inquire about your concerns regarding that type of interference and what the appropriate solution on the part of Congress might be.
Thanks so much for the question. I'll actually take the first crack at that. We do a lot of work at the Democracy Fund on cybersecurity connected to elections, and it's clear that election administration was a focus of Russian-connected actors. The challenge that we have is being able to communicate how to respond best to these types of threats from the federal level to the state level to the local level. Department of Homeland Security has actually worked pretty hard with the states at developing practices and principles on how to respond to these threats. Groups like the Belfer Center out of Harvard have run tabletop exercises that train election officials on how to do election day rapid response, identifying response to threats and appearances of hacking or intervention. But it does seem to be clear that training and financial support to the local election officials is really important. Last year, Congress appropriated $380 million of funding that was given in grants to the states. Cybersecurity is an expensive deal, and it's a deal that state and locals haven't had to deal with as much as other actors within the federal government. And so, to me, one of the ways to solve it is to provide more and recurring funding from the federal government to the states so the states can determine where their biggest threats are and patch those threats. I don't know if my friends at the Campaign Legal Center have any other thoughts related to that.
So that was Adam Ambrogi of the Democracy Fund. This is Trevor Potter of CLC. I would just say briefly, Eliza, that I think it's very hard to tell what's happening in terms of the governmental response. I've spent a lot of time with some of the intelligence and Defense Department officials, and they basically say, don't worry, we've got it. We're working on this. We know what's going on. We're spending money. We're really focused. Then you see the reports out of Florida that nobody knows what county they were even talking about. They haven't had any word from the federal officials on this. There's no official confirmation, even though it's in the report. So I think it is really vital that people like you and others in the press keep asking the question, and I think it would be appropriate for the government to be, federal government, to be more responsive in detailing what we're actually doing here. Obviously, you don't want to tip off foreign adversaries, but I think you do want to say we are training every state. We are working with every state to train county officials. As you know, this is a very local matter. What was described in Florida is one county, and then it's a private company which was hacked. We, I think, as citizens and as people really worried in this area at the Campaign Legal Center, need some assurance and detail about what is being done to train people, as Adam suggests, and to make certain that there is real coordination between the federal authorities who have this information through intelligence sources and the state and local folk to whom, you know, this is all new. This is not their area of expertise.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Next question, please.
Our next question is from Rachel Eckeroff, and she's retired. One moment.
Hello?
Yes. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. As I hope you've all read the book Dark Money by Jane Mayer. And as she documented, the undermining of our democracy by anti-government oligarchs in the Koch donor network over the last 40 years has crippled our government's regulatory power. Considering our legislatures and courts have also been corrupted over the same period by the same group, who will hold violators accountable?
It's a great question, and this is Brendan from Campaign Legal Center, Brendan Fisher. It's a great question, and as I described in my discussion before, the FEC has a really important role to play here. Court decisions like Citizens United struck down important protections against economic power being translated into political power. But there are a number of laws on the books that just are not enforced. So a big part of the problem with our campaign finance system is the fact that the FEC is not enforcing the laws that are on the books. Coordination, for example. Super PACs are not supposed to coordinate with the candidates that they support, but the FEC has largely failed to enforce the coordination rules that are on the books. Dark money, in large part, is a creation of the FEC. The FEC has failed to enforce the disclosure laws that remain on the books after Citizens United and that the Supreme Court even endorsed in decisions like Citizens United. So I think the importance of the FEC in protecting our elections from interference from foreign actors or from meddling by a handful of wealthy special interests can't be underscored enough.
This is Trevor Potter of CLC. I would add to what Brendan just said that absolutely the FEC could do more than it's doing. It could make a huge difference here. If it is not, because it is deadlocked and therefore effectively unable to act, at the federal level, the recourse is for Congress to step in and change the law. So there is the longstanding Disclose Act introduced in the Senate by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, that is being blocked from consideration in the Senate. The House has already passed H.R. 1, which is the broader campaign reform bill. It includes requirements for disclosure of dark money. And so I think putting pressure on Congress to move on the disclosure piece, it's clearly a big political fight. Majority Leader McConnell has stated that he's not going to bring up any election-related matters in this session, but that's something appropriate to pressure people on. I would just add that the same battle is occurring across the country at the state level, sometimes even at the local level, and there are good progress being made by various states with new disclosure measures being introduced, which will affect all state and local elections in those states. So while we have the current deadlock at the federal level, there are opportunities to push for disclosure of these actors at the state level, and they're usually the same actors. So it's not a totally different playing field, and whether it is local regulations that are being affected by this spending or legislative battles, governorships, secretaries of states, et cetera, that those are all areas that people should be focusing on demanding more disclosure at the state level.
Thank you.
Great. Next question.
And once again, if you do have a question, press star then one on your touch tone phone.
So as the questions queue up, I'll address. This is Brendan Fisher again from Campaign Legal Center. I'll address a point that I think has been discussed a fair amount about a potential error in the Mueller report. Mueller claimed that there was no settled definition of coordination in federal law, and that's wrong. There is a clear definition. There's a clear definition in campaign finance statutes and in FEC regulations. But the question that I've had is whether it matters whether Mueller cited the wrong coordination standard. Campaign finance law only regulates coordination to the extent that there is a coordinated expenditure. So the question is whether there was an expenditure with which the Trump campaign or other U.S. nationals coordinated. So even if we adopt the broader, accurate definition of coordination that is in campaign finance law and FEC regulations, the question is, what is the expenditure? So Russia certainly made expenditures on its social media campaign, but there's minimal evidence that I saw in the Mueller report of the Trump campaign coordinating with the Internet Research Agency. If there's no coordination, then there's no coordinated expenditure. Likewise, we know that Russia made expenditures for hacking, to hack John Podesta's emails and to hack the DNC. But I think there's also limited evidence that the Trump campaign coordinated on hacking. Where there may be some coordination with respect to an expenditure is on the release of the hacked materials. There's a fair amount of the Mueller report that is redacted, but I think there is some evidence that the Trump campaign and perhaps Trump himself coordinated with respect to the release of the hacked materials. But the entity that released the hacked materials is WikiLeaks. And with WikiLeaks, we bump up against campaign finance law's exemption for the media. Campaign finance law does not apply to the media. If an entity is considered a media entity, then it cannot make expenditures. So if there's no expenditure, then there can be no coordinated expenditure, even if coordination exists. There is a redacted section of the Mueller report starting on page 188 that appears to involve an analysis of whether WikiLeaks violated campaign finance law. Hopefully, at one point, we will see an unredacted version of the Mueller report, but my suspicion is that Mueller determined that WikiLeaks falls under the media exemption because it does have characteristics of a publisher.
This is Trevor Potter of CLC. I would add to that I think what's apparent reading the Mueller report is a prosecutor's reaction to the federal election laws, which is, gosh, this stuff is complicated. We're dealing with an expert agency which has issued confusing and sometimes contradictory statements about this, where there are commissioners who maintain different end results and analysis. And that makes it particularly difficult to make a prosecutorial decision that a jury will convict on these facts. And so, again, that goes to the point that Adam Ambrogi made about the importance of clarifying the law and the regulations here, because I think when prosecutors look at what has been said, they are inclined to be very nervous that the expert agency has created a fair amount of confusion in what the standards are and how to proceed here.
And our next question is from Tracy Weston from Common Cause.
Hi. First of all, thanks to Trevor, Aaron, and Brendan for their presentations. I thought they were very clear and helpful. My frustration here is that the president has done nothing, apparently, to resist future Russian interference. People have suggested he won't because he wants their help to get reelected. I don't know about that. Congressional Senate Republicans seem resistant to reforms. The FEC is not acting. So although the remedies that have been discussed seem very good to me, the ability of the implementers to respond seems almost non-existent. And the question is, and I realize CLC is a litigation-oriented organization. The question is there anything else that can be done other than simply wait for 2020 and hope there's a different election result? And I'm wondering, for example, could one file complaints against candidates for not reporting in-kind contributions from foreign governments? Announce that that will be done in advance, even against President Trump, and perhaps someone, Democracy Fund, could fund a process of discovering these in-kind contributions through, in the form of social media posts ads and fake ads and so forth, and report them to candidates so they can't claim ignorance. So I'm trying to figure out what can be done in addition to waiting for a presidential or a congressional or an FEC response to implement reforms, which seems frankly unlikely at the moment.
So I do think one thing that we... This is Erin Klopak speaking. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier and Trevor mentioned too, despite some of the frustration or the great frustration at the federal level, we have seen progress at the state level. And in addition to some of the laws that have already been passed, you know, we also see other states in the process of, drafting laws. So we see development of state-level legislation to be a positive development. And as more and more states continue to address that problem, we think that will also help increase the pressure on the federal government, in part because having a variety of different state laws to comply with is frankly not ideal for platforms or advertisers either. And it's much more efficient for everyone to have uniform, clear laws that apply across the board. So the more laws that come into place, in addition to providing guidance, they can, you know, provide some pressure to for the federal government to step in and establish clarity across the board. I'm not sure that I completely followed the hypothetical you laid out, but I don't know if somebody else wants to jump in. Or...
Yeah, and this is Brendan Fisher from Campaign Legal Center. I think it's certainly important. It's certainly important not to violate the law in order to make a point about other candidates violating the law. So we certainly would not encourage anybody to do anything illegal to highlight how the laws are rarely enforced. But at the Campaign Legal Center, we are filing complaints when we see the law being violated, and we are increasingly suing to hold the FEC accountable when it fails to enforce the law. Just 2 weeks ago, we filed a lawsuit against the NRA for failing to take action against the NRA, or I'm sorry, we filed a lawsuit against the FEC for failing to take action on our lawsuits against the NRA that we filed with Giffords, and we now have an opportunity for a district court judge to tell the FEC to actually enforce the law. So we are increasingly looking for opportunities to hold the FEC accountable in court and make sure that the campaign finance laws that are integral to protecting our democracy are enforced.
It sounds like that's the end of our question period. Thank you to all of our speakers and to all of the participants for joining the call today. Please visit campaignlegal.org for more information. The issue brief, What Special Counsel Mueller's Report Tells Us About Campaign Finance Law and Foreign Interference, and a recording of today's call will be emailed to you. If you are a member of the public and have additional questions or would like more information, please email us at info@campaignlegalcenter.org. If you are a member of the media and would like additional information or to ask a question of the CLC experts, please email media, M-E-D-I-A, at campaignlegalcenter.org. Thank you again to Trevor, Erin, and Brendan, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating, and you may now disconnect.